Good morning again, friends. And that reading from The Voice of the Silence, we think, really puts it forward about this whole idea of mental evolution. It talks about so much that we can do, that we should do in regards to in the secret doctrine, it speaks of cleaning one's soul in regards to evolution, how we have to do it. And that's what this portion in the Voice of the Silence is talking about. how mind is like a mirror. We have to keep it clean. And just be mindful of our senses. There's just so much in this part that we can meditate on in regards to our evolution. So we, as was said, this month, we're looking at the mystery of mind. And people ask, well, does mind evolve? How does that happen? And that's what we're going to talk about today, is mental evolution. And just to initially, we just want to put out the idea that mind, about mind versus mental, is there a difference? And really, there's not. Mind is considered to be a noun, whereas mental is an adjective. So they coincide together, and both basically the same concept. So last week, the class was talked about mind as a principle, a faculty, and an entity. And we're briefly going to go over those three things just to refresh folks' memories, because we do need to discuss that and understand those three aspects in order to understand this idea of mental evolution. So if we're looking at the idea of mind as a principle, we can look at this idea of the whole cosmos, because it is said that as a principle, it can be seen as being cosmic, universal, with thought and ideation. And this principle encompasses, in a very broad aspect, it encompasses this idea of the cosmic and universal. And it is the basis for diversity as well as oneness. So since we're looking at it encompassing everything in the universe, in the cosmos, so of course we can see that it's the basis for diversity as well as oneness. So it has divine, spiritual, physical, psychic, and astral expressions. And it is considered to be the link between the divine and the human. And as we said, as a cosmic principle, mind is everywhere. It is involved with everything. It doesn't matter how small an amoeba, or as, you know, the higher beings, there is mind in some way, shape, or form in the human kingdom were considered to be lit up, and the lower kingdoms have mind, but they are not lit up to self-consciousness. And it is lit, and people ask, well, who lit up the human mind? And it is said that the Manasa Putras, who are higher beings in the human kingdom, lit up mind to self-consciousness. But as was said, the lower kingdoms use mind on a totally different level of impression. And usually, if we're looking at different species, mind is considered to be common to that species, and it's not individualized. And mind will not be fully developed until the next period of evolution. So we have this idea of a principle encompassing the entire cosmos and universe. So then we start to come down like a cone shape, wide at the top and then more narrow. And the second idea we're looking at is that of faculty, mind as a faculty. And this is representative of the exercise of mind. Higher has reason and will, and the ability to think from premise to conclusion, free will and choice. And then, because mind is dual, there is a higher aspect. Even though there's one, there's a higher aspect and a lower aspect. So the higher aspect, as was just said, we are able to think of premise to conclusion, free will, and we have choices. Whereas the lower faculties, for the lower kingdoms, we look at mostly passion, distractions, that sort of thing. Now, one thing that people want to know is the mind the same as the brain? Is the brain doing all the thinking? And it's not. It is a tool of the mind. And the mind needs the brain in order to make contact on this plane. And in many respects, depending on how the brain can function, will determine how the mind is able to get its impressions through. And then the higher aspect has what is known as soul powers, compassion, the heart qualities, intuition, imagination, clairvoyance, thought, and will. And then as we have gone through the cosmos, we've brought down the faculties that mind uses. Then we're looking at the idea of mind as an entity. And as we said, there is only one mind with two functional aspects. As an entity, it is the expression of mental evolution. So we're actually looking at the idea that as an entity is the major determination for mental evolution. So the human kingdom uses self-induced and self-devised means, free will and choice, in order to evolve to higher levels. We hear of the term monad. Manad is that which goes from life to life. Without the monad, we would not be able to evolve. And the monad is Atma and Buddhi. And in the lower kingdoms, mind at this point is not self-conscious. And it's the monad that will pass through all experiences from the lowest of the lower kingdoms at, up to the highest elder brother. And it is important to know that the whole idea of this evolution, the goal is to get back to the source, and we do that by purifying ourselves to be appropriate to continue our course on evolution. And as the thinking principle, one of the duties that mind has is to raise up all of life to a higher level. When we say that the lower kingdoms can't function without human intervention, that is true. It is the human kingdom that helps the lower kingdoms to rise. And as an entity, it is eternal. It reincarnates from life to life, collecting new faculties and experiences as it progresses. So if we're looking at why do we need to know this? Practically speaking, once we are aware that mind needs to progress along a spiritual journey in order to evolve, how does this happen? So we're looking at the third fundamental then, which is evolution. And there's a saying in The Voice of the Silence that we need to raise the self by the self. And this is the progress that mind needs to go through along its path of evolution. And we know that mind, as was said, is dual in manifestation, although in reality, it is only one mind. And the self can be focused, the higher self can be focused towards buddhi, which is intuition, spiritual soul, buddhi manas, with the lower towards kama manas, and kama being the passions and desires. So the goals are to raise kama manas to buddhi manas, but how do we do that? Excuse So B.P. Wadia states, when our actions are charitable, when our feelings are harmonious, when our thoughts are patient, then we are living the spiritual life. The moment we depart from that, we go into material life. So, trying to keep focused on the spiritual in our lives, making theosophy a living power to us, that is how we will live the spiritual life. And the declaration speaks of universal brotherhood, and to try and focus on that as well. And then looking at this idea of the sin of separateness, which is the lower mind working, and to know that everything is checked by karma. And that is an important idea. And to be accepting of what comes our way and to do our duty. Because by making these choices that the higher mind has, that can certainly help affect our karma, which in conjunction with reincarnation, that is how we evolve. And the voice of the silence also talks about the eye doctrine versus the heart doctrine. And that's something else that we can meditate on. The eye doctrine being head learning, and the soul doc, the heart doctrine meet soul wisdom. Now, the secret doctrine puts forth the idea that mental evolution is one of the three main streams of evolution itself, the physical and the spiritual. It explains how the human intelligence and self-awareness progresses throughout the cycles. Now, the secret doctrine says that mental evolution is empowered by Manas, the principle of mind, and the idea of being self-conscious. During the early human three races, Manas or mind was latent or inactive. And as we said, it was lit up by the sons of mind and intelligence, the Manasaputras. At this point, we developed thought, ethics, and free will. And this is one of our trials as we try to evolve, is that struggle between the higher and lower mind. So when mind was activated, it became dual in nature. And the purpose of mental evolution, as has been said, is to polish and spiritualize the mind to rise above our lower nature. And we progress towards greater mental and spiritual enlightenment. Human life does have times of decay, as materialism will take over and divest us from our higher course. Mental evolution is tied to karma and reincarnation, and these are where the choices have to be made. And we will end with a quote from the Theosophical Movement, Volume 37, page 106. And this will tie everything together. The mind, environed by and therefore having to depend upon the senses, finds itself in the world of contacts, categories, and contrasts, of heat and cold, light and darkness, likes and dislikes. In order to know the world of conditioned existence, the mind is obliged to deal with the senses. It attends to their inclinations and gets concerned with sense impressions. This arouses the passion to possess more and more. From passion arise anger and delusion. Thence, the loss of memory and of discrimination, thus leading to the loss of all. The sorry plight or predicament of the mind is described by the voice. The mind is the Raja of the senses, the thought producer, he who awakens illusion. It is the great slayer of the real. Therefore, let the disciple slay the slayer. So we're done the lecture, and we will certainly entertain any. Yes, SL.
First, as a procedural comment, yes, we on Zoom we welcome everyone to attend by video, but if you are driving in a car, that's certainly acceptable. But please turn off your video if you're driving, as the images are very active and can interfere with the attention of others. Also, if you're walking around outside, you're also welcome to attend, but once again, be aware that your movement will distract from the concentration of others. Just a procedural comment. But we do have a question. In the philosophy, we hear that there are three streams of evolution, and in the physical stream, the scientists have recognized that survival of the fittest is very important. And that's a law. I mean, theosophy recognizes that. So, how might survival of the fittest show itself in our mental and even our spiritual evolution? What does that, how would that show itself, the survival of this, of the fittest parts of our nature mentally? How is that accomplished?
Well, we think in regards to survival of the fittest, mentally, it has to do with our choices, how we use as in the reading about our senses and using our senses to the highest that we can. So when we are looking at this idea of survival of the fittest, choosing wisely, and we're not talking about, having to go up, since humans don't have to go out and hunt for food or that sort of thing. So when we're thinking of survival of the fittest, our choices, our feelings, and our thoughts will determine how well we do function. And we think it would probably also have to do with combining with the spiritual is spirit raising up the lower so that those choices that will be made with the highest spiritual ideation that we can make at this point in our lives. So using the two of them together can certainly, when we look at this idea of survival of the fittest, then, I mean, and then the whole, this is such an complicated idea. And then we're looking at the idea of genius, because if we know that a genius is the survival of the fittest, is the probably the ultimate when it comes to mental development. And then if they're focused also on the spiritual, then that is the highest life, we think, if anybody else wants to add anything. Theosophy Hall and
Well,
then MDW.
genius is usually an overdevelopment in one area, but true genius would be like a master and adept, somebody whose all the principles are active and the lower is in abeyance. And they can command the lower to do their bidding. So genius is usually, as we know it, it's amazing and it's astonishing in many ways. But a genius in one area can be very lacking in other areas.
Yes, yeah, so they somebody can be a genius like in math or in music, that sort of thing, and kind of the other portions of their lives can be lacking. But a true genius, as was said, would probably be a an elder brother. MDW.
Well, we would think that the idea of separateness that is held, when that is let go of, the humanity is evolving. It's recognizing that we are not separate from each other, that there is a binding force amongst us. Mentally is probably the, it said it's the link between the body and the spirit and matter is the mind. So that we would think that this idea of being separate is really holding us back of being of able to communicate and also many other things. So the more that that becomes realized, I think that's part of the evolutionary process, I would think.
Yes, I mean, we hear in many meetings about the sin of separateness. And as was just said, if we are practicing separateness, then we are missing the contact that we should be having with others. And by getting rid of that focus in our lives, that perspective of separateness, and realizing that we're all spiritual beings, then we can help others. We can be more compassionate, and it will just carry on by being compassionate towards others and loving. So we have a comment here at Theosophy Hall.
Yes, well, someone is wholly intellectual in their outlook, their heart principle is in abeyance. And intellectuality all by itself tends downward, it tends towards the lower nature. And also that sin of separateness, where they one would think, well, we could tend to look down on others as being just why don't you get it? You're inferior, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, as was stated in our talk, the whole idea of the heart doctrine versus the eye doctrine. Theosophy Hall.
Survival of the fittest reminds the student of the declaration where we have to fit ourselves by studying otherwise to be better able to help and teach others. Prioritizing universal brotherhood or the profounder realization of it or a profounder conviction towards universal brotherhood means setting the self aside to be selfless in our attempts to elevate the mental in all of humanity. The question is, in the voice, how do we cleanse the mirror without becoming attached to the reflection? In other words, how do we avoid seeing ourselves in others without becoming like narcissists?
Oh, yes. How do we clean the mirror without becoming a narcissist? Well, if we're cleaning the mirror, then we are, it's hard. We are hoping that that whole idea of becoming infatuated with ourselves, yes.
Well, it's the gentle breezes of soul wisdom that clears the mirror. And the narcissist doesn't really even look in the mirror except to see their own reflection.
Yes. Thank you for that. The gentle breeze of soul wisdom is what cleanses it. And a narcissist may just look at a mirror, the mirror for himself. JCS?
So when we're contemplating evolution, self-devised evolution, maybe we can envision a progression from self-centered, narcissistic identification with the body, the brain, the personality, gradually transforming into a higher degree of self-centeredness. In other words, a one-pointedness, a focus on soul and how to evolve or construct better use of soul energies. And then that gradually transforms eventually into a high degree of selflessness, where all narcissistic, individualized, divisive tendencies have been extinguished. And in selflessness, it's a unity with no thing, a unity again with absolute purified spirit.
And the in the talk we talked about mind being a principle and that it's cosmic and universal. So we can, if our perspective is such that mind as a principle encompasses everything. And if we can, as was said about selflessness, focus on that, try and determine our sense, which are the appropriate senses, like the astral senses are the higher ones, and realize that as a principle, mind is diverse and as well as being one. So this diverseness in life, in the human kingdom, the animal kingdom, everything is diverse. And being able to focus on the higher, keep ourselves our perspective on not being separate, but realizing that we are all one. Doesn't matter how many people, animals, plants, whatever on the planet, everything is melded together by this idea of spirit. So. SL?
One of the mysteries of mental evolution is it doesn't seem to go directly upward. I mean, there's this impression in science very often that evolution is constantly moving forward, like an inclined plane or a line that's gradually going up. But we see that's not the case, in fact, that we have periods of darkness and light in our minds, individually and collectively. Sometimes the mirror is more dusty than others, and easier to clean than others. How important is this doctrine of cycles to the whole process of mental evolution?
So, how important is the idea of cycles with with how we evolve mentally? Well, as was just said, I mean, if we look back, we can see that there are cycles of of war, of peace, and then, of course, catastrophes that happen. There's cycles in those too, which interrupt people's lives to the point where they're just focused on survival. So we have to keep focused and look back because it is said in the philosophy that we can go back, 1500 years and then and just keep going back 1500 years, and we can see things that are similar to what is going on now. So we can learn from these cycles. And by learning from the cycles, That is one way we can evolve mentally. JCS and then SL again.
So sometimes when we think of cycles, we think of the sine curve, you know, that little horizontal line that goes up and down. But in this theosophic notion of evolution of mind, as human beings, don't we turn that repetitive sine curve on its ear? And isn't spiritual mental evolution more like a spiral? Does that make any sense?
Yes, because when we look back, we started our evolution in very ethereal form, and then we became more material. And the whole idea with that, with the spiral, is that as we move up that spiral, the perspective hopefully would be that we are improving, that spiritually we are becoming more mindful of others as spiritual beings as well. So SL, and then we have a chat.
In connection with the role of cycles, it draws to mind that article by William Q. Judge, "Return of Our Return of Impression and Our Evolution." The idea that in our mental evolution, if we set up the right mental impression, it will keep coming back cyclically, and we can build a habit and a character of a certain mental quality, which will help us get through those darker cycles more easily.
Thank you. So let's see what the chat is. Mind was lit up 18 million years ago. That's a real long time ago. How come we have made little to none mental progress? Look at all the people who have mental problems. Well, we want to make a comment in regards to the mental problems. We think that is more of a karmic type of an idea. And when it says, how come we have made little to none mental, well, we have made mental progress. I mean, from an individual perspective, we may look back and think, well, we haven't progressed very far, especially when we see, you know, all the wars and the violence going on now. But we have a comment here in Theosophy Hall on that.
Yeah, as far as the mental health issues, psychism is on the ascendancy, and psychism is a result of passivity. And no, it's not good. And as far as 18 million years of progress, we have to consider that we've been through different ages, gold, silver, and bronze, and we're in the Iron Age or the Dark Age or Kali Yuga now, and everything is topsy-turvy, and a lot of the karma from the past is, especially from Atlantis, is starting to ripen. And we just have to go through it. And it's the shortest of the ages, but it's a chaotic age. Everything is kind of upside down. Progress is four times faster than in other ages, or regress, or whatever. It's just, it all needs to be, it's ours. And we can't look at somebody else as creating this. We were the ones that created it. It's us. So we own it and we have to deal with it.
Yes, karmically, it is ours. And that duty to deal with it has come to us. And the idea of the Kali Yuga, I mean, we can make progress quicker in the Dark Age, in Kali Yuga. So if we're mindful of that, we can work it to our advantage, even though it's a very materialistic time right now. If we can come ye out and be ye separate, then, you know, hopefully we can make some progress. Theosophy Hall?
And the attempt to make mental evolution progress, at least in our everyday life, we're told that the masters help us out from time to time. The question is, how do we let the masters assist in mental evolution without being receptive and or passive to their influence?
Well, in regards to passivity, they can, like with Thomas Paine. Thomas Paine was a very active thinker, did a lot of writing, a lot of thinking, lecturing, all of that. So he was not passive. He has said that he always felt as though a lot of the ideas for his writings, he said, somebody put them in my mind. So we know that it doesn't matter if our minds are active. If the masters want to work through us, they will. But passivity can often allow lower ideas to get into our thinking and disrupt our spiritual progress. JCS and then Theosophy Hall.
A couple of thoughts. One, the masters cannot do everything and anything they want to do, right? They have to work within law. So each soul who aspires to become a companion needs to be self-evolved and in a certain way self-purified and self-controlled in order that in states of meditation and deep sleep, there can be a commune, if you will, with the higher aspect of self. And that takes to it a second thought, which is there's no us in them spiritually at the core of eternal essence. That soul that blooms fully in the Mahatma is soul that is blooming or evolving in lesser degrees of use among other human beings. So in many ways, this whole process of self-evolution is an individualized effort to begin to refocus, refine the whole essence and notion of what it is to try to reach divinity and be at one with it. And in that way, allow the Mahatmic fully illuminated to shine through.
Thank you very much for that. Theosophy Hall?
Well, masters are behind the scenes. They need companions. And we try to be their companions. Generally, they work with movements rather than individuals. But there's an expression, first deserve, then desire. So masters only help those that have earned it. And it's not passive, it's very active. One has to be very active and engaged and involved in order to even expect that. And we wouldn't even know if the masters are helping us, but they have helped individuals in the past, and it has been documented. And they work in all great, they're behind all great philanthropic movements and groups all over the world, not just the Theosophical movement.
Thank you. SL?
I just wanted to go back to a moment to this idea of narcissism. Well, yes, the cause of narcissism is a self-identification with the image. But the effect that makes it particularly narcissistic is falling in love with that image to the exclusion of anything else, and only being concerned about the welfare and idolization and power of that image. Now, we have the ability to witness but not identify with the image, and devote put all our powers of devotion and love to that which is real and not an image, to that which is the observer in each and all, the soul, the spiritual within each and all. And in that case, we can live with that image, but not fall in love with it. We can master it.
Yeah, and we wonder if a narcissist is able to change the way they are thinking in regards to that being in love with themselves to the exclusion of all. We have read that they can't, but we don't know if that's real or not. So, SL, were you?
It is because of the lighting up of manas and our free will and choice. We may have obstacles under karma that greatly obstruct our progress, but we at any moment we can begin to make those efforts which will eventually free us from those obstacles. The fruit of that may not be in this life, but in some life it will show itself for.
Thank you. Yes, so check by karma always is there. MDW, did you have your hand up?
Unmute, please.
Unmute.
We have a question, but it should have been asked at the beginning of the meeting rather than at the last minute. So we will just save it for another time.
All
Thank you.
right, thank you. Well, we are at the end of the class, and we certainly thank everyone for attending, and we hope to see you all on Wednesday. Thank you.